Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that still needs a new tagline, as we invite a new expert every week to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks, who came up with the original tagline and now finds that it's being dissed for no good reason, really.
Well, just I thought I'd come up with it. You dug out, you did a bit of sort of technological archaeology.
I did a search on WhatsApp.
Yeah, found the evidence, proved that you'd come up with it, and now I've said it has to be shelved. Because I'm that petty. So yeah, if you've got any ideas for what our tagline could be, let us know. What are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about self-driving cars.
Very good.
Which we have discussed a lot.
Yes.
Over, you know, various coffees and other drinks all the time, basically, because we've seen this not coming for a long time, haven't we?
Yeah.
But last week, Mercedes announced that they have got a self-driving car that's going into final approval for use on certain roads in California and Nevada.
Okay, so when we say self-driving, do we mean actually self-driving, or do we mean sort of, you know, Tesla self-driving?
It's not Tesla self-driving, which is not self-driving.
Yeah.
I mean, Teslas, you are not allowed to take your hands off the wheel. You're not allowed to go off and do something else. You're not allowed to, you know, lose your attention. Whereas this one, the car basically will take over. It will tell you, right, I can take over at this point, and you can, you know, check your phone or do whatever you want to do. You scroll through Twitter, you don't have anything you have to do until the car tells you, actually, I'm going to need you to take back control. But it's only going to happen under certain, like, low speeds, relatively low speeds.
Yeah.
And on certain roads. So it's basically where the car feels like, I know this environment, I know the speeds aren't going to get out of control, I've got time to react to things that go on, you know, I can do this.
So it's geofenced.
Yeah.
And it's restricted speed.
Yeah, yeah. So it'll be okay, when you're in traffic, basically, won't it? Basically, when you're in traffic, the car will say, fine, I've got this.
So I've just got a new car, Housey.
Housey.
And
what have you got?
It's an electric BMW.
Yeah.
And of course it is. It has.
Does it still look like a drug dealer's car?
Actually, slightly less than the old one. Like I'm a grown up. And it has a sort of adaptive cruise control. So when I was driving back from Manchester to London, I was sort of experimenting with it on the motorway. And it's quite spooky. I don't know if you've driven with it where...
Yeah, I've got on the ID3.
So you set your speed, but then it sort of follows the car in front. So if it needs to slow down and it keeps a safe distance, it won't let you... Like, you can take your hands off the wheel and it'll keep you in the lane.
Yeah.
And
did you actually try that, taking your hands off the wheel?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I haven't got the guts to do that.
I didn't like it. But within sort of, I didn't time it actually, but I reckon 5 seconds, no, maybe a bit longer, it will then like flash and say, hands back on the wheel. Like it knows you haven't got your hands on the wheel and it wants you to have.
Yeah.
And so that's quite good. But it is, it's quite spooky.
Yeah.
And doesn't feel right. But I imagine you get used to it very quickly.
Well, I think so. I mean, I've had my VW ID3 for like over a year now.
Yeah.
And it does kind of, you know, have that sort of level of, it'll keep a distance.
Mm.
It will, you know, keep your speed how you want it to be. It'll keep you within a lane to a certain degree. I haven't really fully tested it.
Yeah.
But it sort of feels like, you know, it's not self-driving by any means, but it knows what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and it knows what the speed limit is and it will slow you down to that. So if you take your foot off the accelerator and you're coming up to a change in speed limit, it will bring you down to that speed.
Mm.
So you're coming into a 30 zone, it just breaks it to and it hits the 30 exactly at the point when you enter that zone, which I think is quite impressive.
Yeah, that's quite good, isn't it? The thing about it is it feels like it's in a slightly odd sort of zone where it's not fully self-driving. And it's asked, and it requires me to still be concentrating, but it's sort of lulling me into not concentrating. It feels like quite a dangerous area to be in.
Exactly, and that is the big problem with this, and we'll get into this later on.
100 years ago, the introduction of cars transformed our way of life, our infrastructures, our industries and our cities. Lots of us spend hundreds of hours every year behind the wheel. But the story of cars isn't all nice. Approximately 1.3 million people die each year around the world as a result of road traffic accidents. Could the answer to the problem be self-driving cars? For Elon Musk, the answer is yes. In 2022, he said he would be shocked if we hadn't achieved full self-driving cars safer than a human by the end of the year.
We're still tracking very much to have widespread deployment of FSD beta this year. So I'm
That might sound promising if he hadn't made the same claim in 2019 and in 2018 and in 2017 and all the way back to 2014.
I should say, if basically FSD beta will be available to anyone who requests it by the end of this year.
So why are things stalled? Is it just impossible to do? That's why this week we're asking, will we ever have self-driving cars? Now, I feel like we don't really need an expert for this episode, but did we get one anyway?
Yes, we did. I'm wondering if that's our new tagline, actually. We don't really need an expert.
It's quite good. I mean, it's certainly what we believe. Might not be true.
Yeah. This week, we've got Jack Stilgo, who's a professor of science and technology policy at UCL. One of the things he's a real expert on is how we sort of think about new technologies and how we're going to use them. And self-driving cars is one of his great big sort of, you know, expert areas. So I asked him, first of all, basically, how long have we been toying with the idea of self-driving cars?
Self-driving cars have a short history and a long history. The long history goes back at least to the 1950s, where, you know, driving was seen as central to the American ideal of freedom and exploration, but it was also seen as annoying and unsafe. And if there were ways to offer automation of that process, then that was seen as a great thing for companies like General Motors and Ford. So you had these companies developing visions of self-driving futures, right back in the 30s, 40s, 50s. But in most cases, that was about systems that would enable self-driving, which were mostly to do with self-driving roads rather than self-driving cars. America was building out its highways at the time. If you could design highways so that they could, you know, in effect shuttle a car along basically like it's on rails, then that would allow people to switch off and enjoy the American open road. That vision, though, is understandably rather expensive. And so the sort of shorter history of self-driving cars mostly focuses on artificial intelligence. So it says, given roads as they are at the moment, and given, you know, all of the complexities, how might you get a computer to navigate through that complex world?
Wouldn't it have been amazing if just one country somewhere had gone, right, we're going Scalextric, effectively. All of our roads are going to be based on Scalextric. And so you just start everywhere else, just normal cars, and then you go to Finland and you have to drive a car that's on rails.
It would be Finland. It would definitely be Finland.
Yeah, something like that.
That's what a tram is, isn't it?
Except but individual trams.
Yeah, so it'd be like your personal tram.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Quite funny.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of problems with the whole... It's so easy to see the idea of a self-driving car. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it just senses the environment. It knows the road, obviously, because we've got GPS. It knows what it's doing, knows where it wants to get to, knows how to do it. And obviously, when we're driving a car, what we're doing mostly unconsciously is monitoring the environment. We note a pedestrian sort of further down that it might cross the road. Mm-hmm. You know, you see somebody walking a pet, you think, you know, that dog might jump out in front of the car. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, we're constantly monitoring our rear view mirror as well to check that nobody coming up trying to overtake us or something like this. And you've got this sort of various things going on. And you sort of think a computer should be able to do all that. You know, an AI system with the right sensors all around the car can sense, you know, can see the traffic up ahead. It knows what's happening with the traffic because it's getting the GPS information. So it should be a doable thing, but it's proved incredibly difficult to do.
Because what you're asking it to do is sort of scan for novelty, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah,
so you're saying, okay, here's the picture. What are the things that you're not expecting? And we're actually really good at that.
Yeah.
As humans, like you say, doing it sort of on an unconscious level, really.
Yeah.
But it's quite sophisticated. And in one way of doing it is you have to provide it with a map, a sort of, well, actually map is underplaying it, isn't it? A kind of 3D or 4D representation of everywhere it might go in the world. Then get it to constantly compare what it's got in its database to what it's actually seeing so that it can then identify problems or things it might need to avoid or whatever.
Yeah.
And that is a huge amount of data, first of all, that it needs to have on board.
Yeah, and then you've got, on top of that, you know, so you can program in all the things you can expect or might expect, but then you've got things like, you know, oh, a guy's just got into his van, and you don't, it looks like he's just got into his van, actually he's just walked around in front of it, and he's going to come out the other side of it. And as a human being, you know the kinds of things that people do. If a car in front of you pulls up and stops, you think, actually, somebody might open the passenger door there, and just, you know, have not looked behind them and just get out. And the car needs to think about that, you know, as a kind of thing that might happen.
But presumably once you have, maybe not once, but if you have a fleet of cars, self-driving cars out there, and they have a kind of central processor somewhere, then they can share all of this information. So they can kind of get
they can
better.
Learn as a fleet.
They can learn as a fleet, which is great.
Yeah.
Because then you don't, as... Yeah, as individuals, we, by and large, sort of need to learn by experience. I know we can be told certain things. Whereas this lot can literally have a sort of hive mind, a fleet of cars, couldn't they? Which would be
but,
quite good.
But isn't it incredible to think that, like, you know, there's been attempts to keep, to get this happening for, you know, what's going on for, well, at least 10 years now, that people have thought, oh, it's just about to happen.
Mm.
And it still hasn't happened, you know. And that's because it's such a hard problem compared with everything you might think it is. And, you know, in that time...
I'm going back to fusion, I think. This is too hard.
I think there's a great episode to be like, just create a timeline of things that aren't going to happen. But anyway, so I think, you know, Tesla's been on it really since 2013, you know, seriously saying, you know, we're just around the corner. But Tesla is not really achieving it. There's Waymo, which works in very like geo-fenced environments. So, so you know, the roads are set up for
self-driving.
Google's sort of attempt. And it's kind of, you know, pretty much citywide. I can't remember where it is now.
Is it Chicago or something?
No, no. I don't think it's somewhere much smaller and a bit more rural than that, basically. But you can set up a city to be friendly to self-driving cars. And then, you know, that's fine. But the problem is that, you know, for instance, here in the UK, you know, you could have them on the motorways and that would be fine. But to be honest, you know, that's not a huge step up from the cars that you and I have.
No,
really.
No.
You know, they're not that different, really, on a motorway. But when it comes to driving around, you know, towns, like, you know, UK towns are not laid out in the same way that American towns are, for instance.
No, the grid system is useful, and we don't have it anywhere.
No, we have horrific road systems. So there's lots of efforts to kind of do this for a long time. There's a great article I found, Scientific American in 2016, and this guy writes, "Soon, electronic chauffeurs will take us wherever we want to go, whenever we want, in complete safety, as long as we do not need to make any left turns across traffic." Changing road surfaces are a problem too. So are snow and ice. It will be crucial to avoid traffic cops, crossing guards, and emergency vehicles. And in an urban environment where pedestrians are likely to run out in front of the car, we should probably just walk or take the subway. And that kind of sums it up.
A few limitations.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember a couple of years ago, I saw Volvo were going to produce their self-driving cars for, you know, Sweden. And I just emailed them and said, you know, how are you going to cope with blizzards and, you know, all the other stuff? Just emailed the press people. And I never got a reply. Because as soon as you've got snow in the equation, you can't see.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where humans can see, you know, the self-driving cars can't see. So, you know, we've got some stuff happening. And Mercedes are obviously confident that they can make this work in sort of arid desert environments like Nevada and California. But that will still be, you know, very limited, really. So it's just kind of interesting, I think, to kind of see how hard it is. And yet, you know, 17-year-olds can get in a car and learn to drive. Yeah. And within effectively a couple of months, they can do it all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of, it is surprising, isn't it?
Yeah,
That it's so difficult.
Yeah.
It was DARPA put a load of money into it. The
Grand Challenge. Yeah, that started, I mean, that was
2007, something like that.
Yeah.
So they're there's the sort of research arm of the US military.
Yeah.
And it's sort of what you need is the military to be interested.
Yeah.
And then they'll plug a load of money in.
I think the first couple of challenges they put out, nobody could really do it. And then suddenly it got a lot better.
You know, absolutely disastrous. So it's sort of just basically just saying, can you get your self-driving car from point A to point B? And the first couple of years, they were like, no, absolutely not. Everything's just like...
Yeah.
And I think people were probably, again, a little bit shocked at how difficult it was. But then they got progressively better, and that's where the sort of main leaps forward were made, I think.
Interestingly, the thing that people always say about tech is the first 90% is easy, it's the last 10% that's hard. And that's where Tesla is. I mean, Tesla's cars are really not any better than my car or your car in terms of what you're allowed to do.
No.
So, you know, and they've been really pushing towards this self-driving thing. And actually, you know, they've just got stuck at what's known as level two.
Yeah.
Level two driving. And the idea is to get to five, where the car is completely autonomous in any condition whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the Mercedes ones that will go on, and actually they're already in Germany, you're allowed to do it in certain traffic conditions, certain conditions, at level three. But
I thought these new Mercedes ones in California were going to be level four.
No, they're going to be level three.
Oh.
Because level four is basically you are not the driver, right? The car is the driver.
Yeah.
And that's also true in level three. But level three is basically when the feature requests that you drive, you must drive. Level four, it's you will never drive.
Oh, so sometimes what's the difference between level four and level five then?
Level five can cope with all conditions. Level four is you will never drive in that, you know, there might not be an accelerator and a steering wheel. But there will be some conditions in which the car will not operate.
Oh, the car just says no thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going to have to stop for 3 hours because it's snowing. Yeah. Unlucky.
That's exactly what it. You know, that's the whole problem. Is like, and Waymo had this with their taxis. It's like heavy rain. Basically, the car pulls to the side of the road, and which is not ideal if you're, you know, trying to go out, you know, go to the cinema or something.
Because I thought that most companies had just sort of sacked off the idea of trying to go for level three or level four, because they're too difficult because of the sort of the handover problem of that. Like, we're rubbish at sort of being told, yes, you can do something else, but but then suddenly you're going to be asked to focus and take control, and we're just too distracted.
Exactly.
Too
so Audi have just given up. They said, we're not going to do level three.
Yeah.
And there's a few companies have said, well, we're going to aim for level four, but we're not going to bother with level three. Yeah. And the other problem with level three is that the company then takes liability for any accidents during the time when the car says, I'm driving.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So lots of corporate lawyers have said, no. we're not doing that.
So what are the big benefits then of self-driving cars? Like, it isn't just laziness. Presumably, it's safety is the idea.
Exactly that. So I asked Jack about the benefits, but essentially, that's how it's sold, isn't it? It's like, oh, humans make errors, self-driving cars won't make errors. Here's what Jack had to say.
For a lot of the history of self-driving cars, the big benefit was about efficiency. It was about how to get people moving, how to get as many people moving through a scarce road network as possible. More recently, the benefit that's been identified and talked up by the people developing the technology has been one of safety. So as with quite a lot of the technologies involving artificial intelligence, they sort of start from a premise that humans are in some way flawed and that AI offers a solution to this human fallibility. And particularly when it comes to driving, the innovators are fond of reciting a statistic which is, you know, a pretty dodgy statistic, that about 90% of car crashes are blamed on human error. And so they would say, if you could eradicate that human error using, you know, computerized perfection, then you'll be able to sell thousands, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives every year. And it's definitely true that, you know, road deaths are a public health disaster. They're the number one or number two cause of death for young people in lots of countries. But it's not yet proven that the technology is going to solve that anytime soon.
There's also a kind of an emotional hurdle, I think, that is, whilst we obviously don't like road traffic accidents and fatalities caused by humans, we sort of understand them. Whereas if you're saying there are going to be some accidents with self-driving cars, I think they will be harder to swallow somehow. Just instinctively, I think that.
Yeah, I mean, they are, because we don't like robots, which is what they are. They're robots. And we don't like robots having the responsibility over human life, effectively. So people will have a huge problem with just sort of accepting that, oh, yeah, sorry, your mum was killed by a robot.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine the headlines once that happens?
Kind of potentially made a choice as well. I mean, that's one of the really fiddly things, isn't it?
Yeah. And we'll get onto that ethics thing. Mm. But the problem you've got is, as well, I mean, it is an emotional thing, but I think, I mean, humans, 90% of car crashes are human error. I can kind of take that, because, of course, you know, effectively that's why they're not called accidents anymore. They're called incidents. You know, they are the responsibility of somebody. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I've been driving for 35 years. I've never caused an accident. And I think accidents are bad, and when they happen, they're bad. But I think, you know, they're not an everyday experience. Mm. If you call on, like, oh, we're going to have self-driving cars because, you know, we have, you know, these terrible crashes and accidents, I'm not sure that they'll disappear in any scenario where you have human drivers and self-driving cars on the roads at the same time.
Well, that
and
sort of
we're not going to suddenly jump to everyone having a self-driving car.
That transition, I think, is going to be really, really difficult, because, yes, at the point where it's all self-driving cars, you assume that you almost reduce accidents down to zero.
Yeah.
Almost.
I mean, I guess pedestrians,
there will still be some, but it'll be very, very low.
Yeah.
Because presumably these cars can probably not necessarily directly communicate with one another, but
They will avoid each other.
They would avoid each other.
They'll have a system for prioritising who goes where and everything else.
Yeah. So you can see how that all works. But yeah. in that period where you've got some self-driving cars and some non-self-driving cars, the sort of, like, the bullying behaviour, for example.
I'm going to be bullying.
I can pull out in front of a self-driving car, carte blanche, essentially, yeah. can't I? Because I'm just like, well, I know it's going to stop.
It's got to stop, hasn't it?
Yeah, it will stop.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, yeah, get out of my way, steer into it, it moves out of the way. Like, and I'm sure that will happen.
Yeah, oh, 100% if I'm allowed to drive still.
Yeah.
But it'll be that thing, you know, when you've got like two lanes merging and you're like, you cruise along really fast past all the people who are already queuing to get into the left-hand lane, which you know you've got to get into. And you make that judgment call about when you're going to stop. Mm. And Philippa told me off the other day, she said, like, it's far too soon. You could have gone another half mile before you tried to, you know, muscle your way into that queue. And I was like, no, I think the further ahead you go, the less likely people are to let you in.
Yeah, but, I mean, they do let you in.
With a self-driving car, that's going to be easy.
This is an argument I've had numerous occasions on the radio because Rachel, my co-host, loves zip merging. She's a real advocate for zip merging. So she will go right to the, and she says it's much more efficient. If everyone does it and accepts that that's what we're doing, she's right. But unfortunately, no one does. No. So everyone hates you.
I mean, you can see them. You're literally there, like pulling across, trying to get in. And you look in the mirror and you can see the driver behind you basically going, no.
Yeah.
No. And inching forward.
Exactly. Like, no one make any eye contact because in the peripheral vision, I know you're there and you're not coming in.
I love it. It's one of my favourite things. But, I mean, it tells you everything you need to know about human beings, doesn't it?
It does.
That whole thing.
I wonder as well if there's a sort of economic disparity that comes into play here. So in developed countries with, you know, better roads and better infrastructure, driver safety is probably better already.
Yeah.
And in less developed countries where you've got worse roads, worse cars, driver safety is probably not as good. But those places aren't going to get self-driving cars as soon anyway. So you're kind of tackling the problem where it is the least.
Yes,
severe anyway.
Exactly. So the statistic of, you know, all the accidents and all the deaths caused in vehicle collisions around the world, they're not the relevant statistics. It's what percentage of those is actually happening where you would be able to put self-driving cars on the road. Mm-hmm. And I suspect it's quite a lot less. And so, but the whole business model relies on these kinds of spurious statistics effectively.
So we're going to reduce road traffic accidents right down.
Yeah.
And you're like, are you actually, or are you going to put self-driving cars in areas where the roads are really good and there aren't many accidents anyway?
Yeah. And when you look at like the ones that are now getting this sort of level three clearance, you know, they are the absolute pinnacle of like Mercedes and Audi, you know, potentially next year, the year after. You know, they're the executive class cars that, you know, that probably didn't get into a lot of scrapes anyway, to be honest, because they've got all the sensors, you know, they've got collision avoidance systems going on.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not replacing the ones that are, you know, actually, you know, problematic. And then infrastructure. I mean, you know, like we've said, UK roads are fine. Motorways, you can imagine them doing it. You know, you negotiate around some of the sort of little villages, you just can't do it.
No.
I've been told by insiders on self-driving cars that they will never operate where they haven't got good mobile signal because they need to be able to connect to a central hub, really, for all the information and for the safety.
Well, yeah, because
if
you can't do that, then you'd literally have to have the information stored in the car.
Yeah.
And like, it's mad to think, but actually that would be a huge hard drive, like a really you're like, there's no boot space in this
car. Why is there no back seat?
Yeah, it's a massive hard drive with all of the information.
It's really hot back here, by the way.
Okay, time for a quick break now. When we're back, we'll be discussing some of the moral dilemmas of self-driving cars, what the future of self-driving cars looks like, and of course, answering today's question, will we ever have self-driving cars?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back. Now, I'm just going to say it because I say it every time we ever talk about self-driving cars and reducing the number of accidents. The sort of unfortunate corollary of if you do reduce the amount of road traffic accidents, is you suddenly have far fewer organs available for donation.
Yeah.
Because I can't say it's a silver lining, can I? But one of the things that comes out of road traffic accidents is organs, fresh organs that are very useful for people who need them.
Yeah, so and I was wondering.
I don't know how you get past that, really.
I think it's quite simple. You say the price of a self-driving car is you have to donate a kidney.
Yeah, that's good, actually.
Yeah.
You only really get the enthusiasts. Yeah, that's a nice idea.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you'd cut drink driving as well if you had to give up half your liver in order to.
It's not giving me a heart, is it? I don't think that method.
You won't need your, you won't need your corneas though, will you? If you've got a proper self-driving car.
Eyes, yeah.
Level five, you give up your eyes.
Yeah, level five. What are you prepared to give up for level five automation? So we obviously do have some modes of transport that are driverless that work well.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're all pretty much either on rails, like the DLR in London. That doesn't have a driver, and that's all fine.
Yeah.
And then I suppose you've probably, in a sort of farming context, have you got like big automated farming machinery, big machinery working like a quarry where it's so described where it is and what it's doing. So it's like perfectly geofenced and basically nothing unpredictable is ever happening.
Yeah.
Then you can really see how big agricultural machinery could be automated very well, and I think is being automated.
Yeah, it is. And there's various experiments going on as well with trucks just on the highway. So they're driven, because the idea is that if you haven't got a driver, obviously you can do those massive long journeys without a break.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you just keep, and you basically have a driver that gets off parks on the lay-by on the highway, effectively on the hard shoulder.
Yeah.
Driver gets out and goes home. The truck can then drive itself.
What's he doing, hitchhiking?
the truck then drives itself for like 2,000 miles,
and then gets picked up by someone.
And gets picked up by someone. I don't know what they do about refueling, though. To be fair, because I bet it's not.
Maybe you just have to have.
Don't know. I mean, you maybe have.
Well, it would have worked maybe back in the day when you had fuel attendants.
Yeah, yeah.
Then someone could just do it for you.
Yeah.
But I suppose most of them are thinking electric now.
Yeah.
In which case, maybe it's. No, it's still an issue, isn't it?
So the experiment is then to have a driver just waits at the other end and takes it off the highway and into the sort of the industrial zone.
The
or whatever.
Tricky bit to navigate.
The tricky bits, you've done all that stretch without a driver, and that's quite doable. I can see how that's doable.
Yeah.
So there are ways in which you can make this happen. But what we think of as as a car journey, a normal car journey, is incredibly difficult to do at level. Level 3, 4, or 5, to be honest.
Mm. I mean, it occurs to me that, when we're talking about the sort of conditions under which self-driving does work, that we probably would need to change our infrastructure, just make the sort of the driving world, the driving environment a bit more predictable. And I don't know if we particularly are prepared to do that, but if more of our roads were just like motorways,
Then it would
work. But
that's not where people are doing the majority of their driving, really, is it?
No.
And then you've got those issues like, you've seen those people who just put a little sticker on a speed sign.
Mm.
And if you understand how machine vision works, you can design a sticker that basically looks really innocuous, and you stick it over on one bit of the speed sign and the car reads it as a completely different speed.
Yeah.
So there's kind of issues like that you have to be
proof
against. Hacking. Mm-hmm. You can hack these cars. Probably hack your car and mine now quite easily.
Yeah.
Because I don't think the security system's very good.
No.
But because they're not self-driving, you can't just make them go off,
Yeah, I mean, the guy, when he gave me mine, he got keys and then like a little sort of credit card thing as well. Like, you can set this up so you can just use that instead of the key. And I was just like, And then he went, I mean, I probably wouldn't do it. And I was like, right, okay. That's a big sell.
It's a funny thing. So the same guy that told me about, you won't ever get a self-driving car that works if there's no Wi-Fi, no mobile signal. He also said that car manufacturers get the worst computer programmers. So basically, if you're a good computer programmer coming out of university courses, you're working in the city, the high paid, the high prestige jobs. And the car manufacturers basically have to mop up all the, lower thirds.
The dregs.
Graduates. Yeah, the dregs. And so what he said was that, like, the security systems and the programming for these things is not particularly well done.
Mm.
And I certainly would agree with that with the ID3. I think it crashes too many times.
Do you think that might change, though? Like, if
When I say crashes, the electronics crashes. Yes.
Do you think that might change if, because previously going and working on the sort of the programming side of a car, it's just not very appealing because what are you doing?
Yeah.
Whereas now it's a bit more of a challenge and a bit more exciting.
Maybe. Possibly. But I'm quite disappointed about the number of times I have to kind of reboot the ID3.
Yeah.
And
it's not a great advert for the ID3 is it?
No. I think it's a great car in many, many ways. But
they're not going to give you a free one.
I was driving it the other day and just like the whole display went off. Perfect. It was like no battery information, no speed information, no sensors working or anything like that. And I had to, you know, drive.
Officer.
I was just about to do like a 2-hour journey and I thought, do I just do it based on my sense of how fast I'm going? And I thought, no, that's not sensible, is it?
It doesn't feel like
so I had to pull off into a supermarket car park and turn the fucking thing on off and on again.
Classic.
It was just like, really? And then, you know, the kind of audio system or the speaker system sometimes picks up you talking and thinks you're trying to talk to the car and just interrupts. And there's lots of glitches and bugs.
You assume that stuff will get ironed out. But yeah, I suppose you don't know if they are just getting the crap, guys.
Yeah.
Possibly not.
Feels like it.
Do you think we'll be comfortable with being, well, not even backseat drivers, but just passengers in our own cars?
So, I mean, let me ask you, are you comfortable as a front seat passenger when somebody else is driving?
Not particularly, no.
No.
No. So I don't think I'm going to be...
And that's somebody who's actually, you know, competent and able and proven to drive. No, I don't think we're going to be that comfortable. I think there's lots of sort of moral dilemmas and ethical issues.
Yeah.
Let me play what Jack had to say.
My biggest concern about self-driving cars would be that we end up repeating some of the mistakes that were made around about 100 years ago with the arrival of the motor car, which is that we sort of sleepwalk into a dependence on a new form of technology to get us around. Now, the motor car enabled massive benefits in terms of people's mobility, you know, their ability to seek out new opportunities, and the benefits shouldn't be underplayed. But by not thinking very much about the long-term effects of that technology, we did things like redesign our cities around the motor car, which is a set of sort of systemic mistakes that now we're trying to correct in places like London, which thankfully, you know, predates the motor car and has a healthy public transport system. But there's lots of cities in the American West, for example, that are utterly dependent on the motor car, where, you know, we now realise how inefficient, how unsustainable, how antisocial and how dangerous that form of dependence is. So when it comes to the self-driving car, my worry would be that we don't think about long-term implications of the technology, and we start redesigning our world around this technology without a good sense of what the benefits are. My sense is that actually we will find really good uses for the technology, but they might be particular circumstances where the technology makes sense rather than being a sort of universal substitute for conventionally driven cars.
So this is interesting, isn't it? This, because we talk a lot about self-driving cars. There'll be segments on the news about, oh, you know, this is the latest thing. You know, I get kind of excited when I hear like there's been progress. And then you suddenly think, are we trying to solve a problem that we shouldn't even be trying to solve?
Mm.
In the, you know, why are we so obsessed with cars still?
I, just pure hunch, I think, I don't imagine in 50 years' time we will all be owning our own cars.
No.
I can't see it. I don't think that will be necessary.
Yeah. Are you leasing your new car?
Yeah,
I'm leasing mine.
Because I don't think there's any point in owning it. I mean, it's cheaper to do it that way.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, electric that's car as well, and the battery's going to be fucked in 3 years.
And like, that in 3 years' time, the batteries will be that much better anyway, so you're going to
want
it. So it makes sense. But yeah, I think that we probably will have self-driving transport of some description. And I think you'll sort of share cars, but not in like a part ownership way. I think there would just be, it'll almost be like an amazing public transport system. That would and I think that's quite a good scenario.
Yeah.
But I don't know if any of the car companies are building towards that, because it's obviously not great for them.
No. Well, I think that's the thing, is that we have to reimagine what works away from, like, you know, the car companies have basically owned the last 100 years.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we've gradually got more and more into owning our own car, always upgrading our car. Mm. You know, nobody hardly ever buys a smaller new car. It's like you always get bigger and better. And they are great now. They're really good. You know, the entertainment systems, being in them, the comfort, the climate control, everything is really good about modern cars.
My new one is a bit smaller, and I have to say I fully recommend it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's. I get in there, I'm like, yeah, this is more the size of a car that you should be driving.
But so I think, you know, hopefully we'll just sort of rethink our relationship with cars rather than bank on this, you know, self-driving car future just for the sake of reducing what is effectively a small number of accidents.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like we don't even particularly, well, like you're saying, we don't really discuss the ethics of it.
No.
The morality of it.
Yeah, so that's like, the social morality.
What are we doing this for? And that's before you get into like the real nitty gritty of the real world trolley problem,
which is my favourite bit,
which is, you know, horrible. But you have to deal with it head on. Which is,
wait,
these cars are going to need to make difficult choices, choices that we are uncomfortable making ourselves, but do make in a split decision. It's literally stuff like there's a cat's just run out, but a child is crossing the road, but a cat's going to get it.
Yeah.
And effectively, you have to tell the car what it's supposed to be doing in those scenarios, and you know. It's not easy.
Or you allow people to personalise their car's safety settings.
Yes, I don't want to allow that.
Don't you?
No, I really don't.
There was a survey where 44% of respondents preferred for them to be able to, like, literally, you know, set a slider on their car of like who dies and who lives. So it's sort of like, do I, you know, I guess it would be multidimensional, but it'd be like pets versus children versus me inside the car.
Yeah. And presumably me inside the car is the one that everyone is always trying to preserve.
2/3 of people said yes. Yeah. They would set it so that the priority for the car was the owner or the person inside it.
So they're running over a kid.
Amazing survey. 64% would want a child to die in order to save their own life.
Yeah, so I don't think you can have that. You can't have personalized because you can't trust people. But then who makes that decision? It's the classic thing with AI making any of these kind of decisions. Like black box AI, I don't really want.
No.
So you sort of need to give it some data to work with. But then you worry that the data is going to be biased.
Yeah.
Because we're biased.
And basically,
I mean, it's an absolute head fuck.
What you're going to get is like, because every manufacturer is going to do their own setting effectively. So it could be that, like, if you buy a BMW, you kind of know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you're going to be all right in an accident.
Yeah.
Whereas if
they'll never come out and say it.
If you buy a Toyota, you know, it's more likely they're going to save children outside the car. It's like, and then that's going to affect Toyota sales.
Yep.
So they're going to like nudge the algorithm towards killing children.
They're going to need to start killing the kids. Yeah.
So it's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so when we're thinking about self-driving technology, I guess you have to sort of weigh up who is going to be benefiting. Like, is it going to be liberating in the sense of, you know, allowing people who can't get around very easily to get around, or, you know, people who can't afford other forms of transport? And honestly, I don't think it's going to do either of those things. I think it's just going to be, you know, rich people. I mean, certainly initially, it's just going to be rich people who are going to benefit.
Yeah.
If anyone.
All right. So here's what Jack had to say about the future of self-driving cars.
So in terms of where we are now and where we might be headed with the technology, I mean, we're now in a situation where if you live in some parts of some American cities, you can dial up a self-driving vehicle and use it to get from A to B without a driver behind the wheel, which is, you know, an absolutely remarkable technological achievement. The question would be whether the technology will remain stuck in those places, right, providing pretty marginal benefits to a small group of people and also costing a huge amount, you know, costing the companies developing the technology a huge amount, or whether it can genuinely spread to other people. I see that there are going to be some difficult battles ahead in terms of, you know, self-driving car companies and cities engaging in an argument about, you know, how roads might need to be upgraded in order to make their cities easier to navigate by machine. I worry that the technology is going to, you know, not realize its potential by staying in that small number of places. But my hope would be that actually the people developing the technology and policymakers are able to collaborate on finding good, appropriate uses for the technology, which might be quite boring ones, right? They might be a driverless bus operating on a fixed route, doing the same thing over and over again, but providing useful mobility at low cost to a bunch of people who didn't previously have access to it, right? That might be quite boring, but it might actually be the sort of thing that people need.
I mean, you get the sense of where this is going when you realise that Uber and Lyft have both sold their self-driving divisions.
Mm.
They're just not bothering anymore. They've sort of decided that it's too expensive to develop. There's no guarantee of any sort of income from the at the end of it.
Which is surprising, because my understanding was that Uber's sort of long-term business plan was always self-driving.
That.
So they're like, we capture the market by massively subsidising the costs.
Yeah.
So we get everyone in using Uber, and then somewhere down the line we get rid of all the drivers.
And the whole point of this phase was to just feed the algorithm, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like, train the algorithm.
Learn. And then get rid of drivers, and suddenly you've got a very, well, after your initial huge capital outlay on your fleet, you've got
the
incredible
whole
business.
Self-driving taxi market.
Yeah.
And they've just abandoned it.
Mm.
And it's really interesting. There was a report came out in February last year, and it basically said that they expect 60% of new cars to have level 2 features by 2030. So that's like what you and I are driving, effectively.
Yeah.
That'll be like the majority of cars are like that. And that's not surprising. It's surprising that it will take until 2030, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they said level 3 or 4 self-driving cars, 5% of the total market by that time. So hardly any, basically.
Yeah.
And they said nobody will ever get to level 5.
Mm.
That's the sort of projection. This is Accenture sort of report. And that's sort of where I think it kind of is, in a sense. You know, I mean, I don't see how you get this last step. And I don't really need it. I quite like driving. I quite like the level 2 sort of assist that I get.
Yeah.
But I don't mind driving at this point, you know.
No.
I don't need to check Twitter any more than I already do.
Christ, no.
So we asked Jack if we will ever have self-driving cars. I'm not sure he liked the question very much.
So to the question of will we ever have self-driving cars, I'm afraid my answer is a real social scientist's answer. And it depends what we mean by we. It depends what we mean by self-driving cars, and it depends what we mean by have. So, you know, the who we is, some rich people might have access to self-driving cars in some parts of the world, but it's not going to be useful. Will we have self-driving cars, or will we own them? Well, for the technology to work, it looks like it has to be a really expensive thing that probably operates at the scale of a whole system. So it makes less sense to think about that in terms of individual ownership. Right. If you're rich, you might be able to buy a car that drives itself some of the time. But that's not necessarily the same thing as a self-driving car. And then finally, to the question of it depends what we mean by self-driving cars, right? These things don't have to be cars. And we're sort of stuck in this mode of thinking that worries about drivers and thinks about cars and individual ownership of cars because we spent so much of the 20th century developing that way of getting about and that way of living. But actually, maybe the interesting mode for the technology is to either to automate existing types of vehicles, like buses or trains, or to design whole new categories of vehicles. So we might see self-driving vehicles offer uses that are very, very different from cars, actually ending up far more disruptive, far more transformative, and get us out of the bad habits that we've got us into when it comes to cars.
Yeah,
that's a no.
Yeah, it was a no. It was a long-winded no. I love it when an expert takes apart the question, word by word.
I think that happens quite often, actually.
Yeah, it does.
It was basically their polite way of saying that's a bad question.
Bad question, I'm afraid. But he's right, though. I mean, the we rich is only potentially rich people. Are they going to own it? Not necessarily. Wouldn't really make that much sense to. And are they going to be cars in the way that we think of cars now? No. But we could have some quite interesting automated vehicles helping
Except
us in some way.
They won't be interesting, will they? They'll be really boring.
Oh, yeah. I mean, interesting in the way that they affect our lives. I mean, they will be dull. Yeah, they're not going. No one is going to be excited about getting in there.
My train's got no driver.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to happen. I mean,
what happens to petrol heads, actually? Well, I suppose they just drive around in old...
Yeah, ever older cars, don't they?
Ever older cars, because there is nothing exciting for those people who get a thrill out of driving.
Yeah.
That's totally gone.
Well,
and it doesn't matter how luxurious the interior, it's still...
Although, electric cars have quite a nice amount of torque and they can be fun to drive. But
yeah, but if you're not driving it,
then
who cares?
So they're just going to stick with level two cars, aren't they?
And it's never going to do anything exciting like break the speed limit.
No. And it's going to stop you doing that.
Take
as well.
A corner a bit quickly.
Yeah. You're not going to swing out the back end.
Yeah. Maybe that's an option. just go into reckless. Reckless and run the kids over.
Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound designed by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Professor Jack Stilgo. Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys, so if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. Then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.